Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Greg Gosell is our number one football analyst, but we're searching for his apprentice.
Assistant to the sensei, that's pretty cool.
Assistant sensei. Okay.
Now, one of 15 candidates to be our number two person joins us to talk about the NFL draft. And he better be good, because we're going to grade him after this segment. And we don't grade on a bell curve. We use the Gosell curve. Okay, you're up and in the red zone. Good luck.
Russell Brown, among the initial 15, now one of the final three, analyst for Cover1.net, host of the Cover One podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at RussNFLDraft.
So, Russell, now that we are down to the nitty-gritty of this competition, and we're down to our three finalists, we've started each interview by asking the finalist how you go about your process in evaluating prospects in the draft. How much film do you watch? How much will you put yourself through to know the player before even commenting on that player?
Well, I really want to just thank you guys for having me on a part of the finals. Really just a blast being a part of this, and so many guys I respect. So I really thank you guys for the opportunity. But as far as, you know, how I go through my process, when I create my board, I go through and I watch pretty much as many prospects as I can, normally 2 to 3 games, whether that's an all 22 version of the film or just, you know, a standard live footage game. And I create notes and I write them down. I'm old school on that. I write down everything in a textbook. And then later on I transfer it into a file on my computer. And realistically, I try to get about 5 games in on every single player. I don't get to, you know, 300, 400 players like some guys. I try to stay as accurate as I possibly can, and I get through to about 150 guys. And with that, I look at, you know, strengths and weaknesses, what position they're playing, you know, what are the things that we look at with that player. If it's a running back, are we looking at his vision, his burst? If we're looking at an offensive lineman, are we looking at how he anchors? What's he do when he approaches the second level? So I just keep the notes in a notebook, and I just kind of go through there. And then later on down the line, which I've been doing recently, just going through my grading scale and putting it together. It's the first year I've put together a grading scale, so I'm sure it's going to be pretty bad, but I'm hoping it's okay.
Russ, as we begin to dive into some player discussion, let's begin at the top of this draft with the New York Giants. What's the key to the draft for them at the top with the second overall pick? And give me your thoughts, detail for us what they could do, should do, and ultimately, what do you think they will do it to?
Yeah, they are definitely the key to the first round, at least within the top 10. I know, you know, so many people say, well, the Cleveland Browns obviously are the key because they have the first overall pick, the fourth overall pick, and that makes sense. But really, the New York Giants, they've got the strongest poker face of anybody out there right now, because Dave Gettleman, general manager, he comes from Carolina. He's never traded his pick in the first round. He's always got his guy. He takes his guy. He likes it. And when you look at it, you know, who do they like? Well, they've got a variety of needs. And so many people say, well, they need to take a quarterback because they don't normally pick from this spot in the draft. While that may be true, we don't know what this team is going to be like next year. They've lost quite a few players, and they could be equally bad next year, and they could be picking at the top of the draft again. And again, we don't know what Davis Webb is. So we talk about the successor behind Eli Manning. We never really know what it's going to be. But this is a team that has serious offensive line needs. You talk about Nate Solder. He got signed to this team. It's a great signing for them, but they lost their two best offensive linemen in Weston Richburg, who went to San Francisco, and they lost Justin Pugh, who went to Arizona. Now they've got to take a look at maybe potentially Quentin Nelson, who would be a great fit, but I don't think he'll be the guy. They should look at him, but I don't think he'll be the guy. Bradley Chubb, we talked about him before last time I was on, because they traded away Jason Pierre-Paul. Bradley Chubb would be a great fit as they transition to a 3-4 defense. Obviously, they have players like Dalvin Tomlinson, Damon Harrison, Olivier Vernon along their defensive line. They signed Kareem Martin, who's a veteran player amongst the defensive line. So they have options there, and Bradley Chubb makes a lot of sense. But then the quarterback position is the biggest thing for them. Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, I would think those are the two guys they like the most. But I want to throw a name out there, and I know people are probably going to buzz about it, but Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield makes a lot of sense for this team. They have Pat Shurmur as their head coach. Pat Shurmur ran the offense for the Minnesota Vikings last year, and no team outside of the Los Angeles Rams ran more play action than Minnesota. Case Keenum last year had 28% play action dropbacks, which was second most in the league. And last year, Baker Mayfield, out of play action, completed 73.3% of his passes with 26 touchdowns and zero interceptions. So he makes a lot of sense for them at two. I don't think they'll go that direction. Ultimately, I think it's down to Josh Rosen or Bradley Chubb for them.
Could you make the argument they need Chubb more right now?
I would think so, simply for the fact that this is a team that I think they want to win now. This is a team that if you bring in a player like Bradley Chubb, we've talked about the edge rusher class. So many people say it's top heavy, and as you get into the middle rounds, there's talent, but there's not as much talent, and it's definitely not like Bradley Chubb. So if you get that player, you have Davis Webb to fall back on, because we don't know what he is. He could be Jimmy Garoppolo for all we know. And if you get a player like Bradley Chubb, you've got him standing up as an edge rusher. You've got Damon Harrison playing probably as a four-eye. Dalvin Tomlinson as a four-eye. Damon Harrison as the nose, and Olivier Vernon would be standing up as well. And Olivier Vernon with a more speed rush approach, more explosive. Bradley Chubb, more of a run stopper. That's very dominant on the outside. So I think that would be the pick if I had to vote right now.
We're constantly hearing about elite edge rushers and how every team wants an elite edge rusher. Are those guys available in the second round? Is there anyone in this draft that you could see falling maybe to the second round that could be an elite edge rusher? And I'll even throw it out for the Titans at 25. Do you think there's going to be an elite edge rusher at 25 for the Titans to select?
Yeah, I think the two guys that come up the most, Josh Sweat out of Florida State and Lorenzo Carter out of Georgia. Lorenzo Carter is a player that a lot of people are going to love, and he's going to boost up boards because of that athletic ability and what he brought at the combine. He measured in at 6'6", and he's got that explosiveness, and he ran in the 4.5s. So he's got everything that you're looking for from the athletic ability standpoint. He played out of position a lot for Georgia, played man-to-man coverage at 6'6". That's just odd. If I'm coaching him, I've got him rushing the passer, stopping the run, and covering flats. And that's the only coverage that I would have him do. And I would think, you know, potentially Lorenzo Carter would be an option for them at 25. Another one, like I said, Josh Sweat. He had a lot of medical concerns. Those checked out. He's got everything as well, athletic ability. He's good at stopping the run. He works his hands. And I like the way he reads and holds his ground and maintains his gap on the outside shoulder and offensive tackle. So I think he's a player that he could go into the first round as well. So those are two guys, I think, that go in the first or second round late, early, day two, and they could be players that make a lot of sense that have elite upside to them.
Let me get your take on a couple of other day two players. Malik Jefferson from Texas, 6'2 or 6'3, somewhere around there, about 236. What do you think about his background from what you've watched on film, and how would he fit within the 3-4?
I really like Malik Jefferson. I think he's one of the most forgotten guys in this class, simply because of, you know, guys like Rashawn Evans, Leighton Vander Esch, Tremaine Edmonds and Roquan Smith. But, you know, he measured in at 6'2", 236. He ran a 4.5, 240, which is fantastic. And 27 reps in the bench press is great. So he's got explosion. He's got strength. He does a lot of things right. I think he could plug in as an outside linebacker. And he'd be a really good fit because I like what he does as far as stopping the run, shedding blocks, and he can blitz and rush after the passer as well. So coverage, he's not fully there yet, but I think he's more far along than a player like Rashawn Evans and like Lorenzo Carter.
Did you get a chance to watch the defensive end from Kansas, Armstrong?
Oh, yeah. I put a piece on him on cover1.net. I really like him. He's a player that played out of position in 2017. He stands up. He can play in a 3-4 with his hand in the dirt, which is what they did a lot, having him play as a 5 technique. And with that, you're more reliant on stopping the run, and you're working a lot on, you know, double teams. And I don't like that for him. I think he's a better fit as a 4-3 hand-in-the-dirt guy or a 3-4 stand-up edge rusher. And he's a guy that, you know, he has the length that you want. He's got the tools that you want. And the explosiveness that he showed in 2016 wasn't there in 2017. But he can stop the run. He's got the tools as far as hand placement, working his hands, and I really like him for a team probably in round 3, There's talks potentially of him maybe going round four, but overall, the tape was very solid from him.
Russell Brown is an analyst for Cover1.net. He joins us on the Midday 180. For the first time in the Bill Belichick era, the Patriots have two first-round picks and two second-round picks going into this draft. How much do they control what the middle part of day one and the first part of day two will be, and how odd is it to say that about the Patriots?
Yeah, it's something that you don't say. I mean, they're the team that's always picking at the back end of the first round, trading that pick away and just getting a ton of mid-round picks and just selecting whoever they want because they're so talented. But two picks in the first round, two picks in the second round, they're picking at 23, 31, 43, and 63. I think 23 and 31, I actually think they're going to keep the pick. I know there's the discussion of them trading up and getting the quarterback. I think they're going to stay put, and I think at 23, they're putting themselves in position to get Colton Miller, offensive tackle out of UCLA. And at 31, I think cornerback out of Colorado, Isaiah Oliver, would be a great fit for them if they've lost Malcolm Butler. And he would be a really good fit for that defense. And then in the second round, I think they could pretty much do whatever they would like to do. More depth along the offensive line, maybe looking at a receiver. I know they have Julian Edelman, but they just traded away Brandon Cooks. And again, you know, the talks of Rob Gronkowski potentially becoming retiring. So if that's the case, you need to be looking at a tight end in this draft and finding some depth behind him. So I think we'll keep most of those picks. They're going to just add a ton of talent, a ton of depth, and I think those first two-round picks there are going to be starters.
Yeah, I think one of the big storylines in day one of the draft at the end of Thursday night will be what New England does. If they go corner, you mentioned Oliver. Colorado has produced a lot of talent in the secondary. Oliver, the most recent example, he's a track guy, but there's an easy film to grade with him, I would imagine, when he matched up against Mike Gallup and Dante Pettis last season. What did you like? What concerns you about what he offers a team?
Yeah, he's an interesting study because of his length and the things that he brings to that, you know, side of the table. But he was a player that just struggled, it looked like, in a lot of coverages with speedsters. But he matched up well in, you know, man-to-man coverage against guys that aren't as fast. He's got that 4-5 speed, but when you're playing up against 4-3 guys and getting burnt that way, I think flipping his hips is something that he's got to get better at. But I like the aggression that he brings. I like that he can switch in and out of man and zone coverages. So I think at the end of the first round, it's definitely worth it because you're getting a good value and you've got great coaches around him that are going to develop him. So while he struggled against more speedsters, again, I think against those possession guys on the outside, he's going to do just fine.
I know you mentioned Oliver for the Patriots. A lot of other analysts would put Josh Jackson in mock drafts with their first round pick from Iowa. Kirk Ferentz raves about him. He's only a one-year starter for the Hawkeyes, and part of that is, at least I think, he was a two-star recruit, had to develop into the talent that he is, but Has his development shown you something that you feel a team should invest in early in this draft?
I definitely would. I mean, before Denzel Ward tested off the charts at the Combine, he was my top cornerback. And then, you know, Josh Jackson at the Combine was being told to redo drills. He just wasn't understanding the verbiage, it seems like. So it seems like maybe there's a learning curve there where you've got to take some time and process him mentally with the verbiage that you're going to bring with your defense. But he's got the size, just under 6'1", 196. He ran a 4.56. He's got a 38-inch vertical, which is solid. Three cone drill, 6.86, and the 20-yard shuttle was 4.03, which is very good. The ball skills with him is what really stands out. Against Ohio State last year, he had three or four interceptions. I can't remember off the top of my head. I believe it was three interceptions in that game alone. And this is a player that's just, you know, the ball skills are there. He can go up and get the ball at the catch point. He can high point the ball. However he wants to do it, he gets to the football. And that's what I like most about him. I think he does a really good job flipping his hips. I think he does a nice job running, you know, stride for stride with guys. But he recovers well and he closes well. And I think that's what makes the difference for him. Because even if he does lose a step or two going stride for stride with the receiver, he closes, he gets to the football, and he's always got his eye on the ball when it's in the air.
One more corner in this group that could be at the end of the first round is Mike Hughes, who started his college career at North Carolina, went to a JUCO, and then spent his junior season at Central Florida. He enrolled there in August and then declared for the draft 5 months later. So he was barely there. Is he ready to be on an island in the NFL?
I don't think he's ready to be on an island yet. I think there's times that you look at him, and there's times he doesn't look lost, but there's definitely, I think there, like much with Josh Jackson, there's that learning curve. I've got Mike Hughes as my third-ranked corner right now. So, I'm a fourth-ranked corner behind Jair Alexander, but he's still a very talented corner. There's been discussions of him playing in the slot. I don't think he's fast enough to play as a nickelback, but I think playing him on the outside, eventually getting him on an island, I think he can do it. I like him in man-to-man coverage. He's very aggressive, and I like that out of a corner. Back into the first round, the Patriots make a lot of sense for him as well. Maybe a team like the New Orleans Saints, if they're thinking of getting somebody opposite of Marshawn Lattimore, he makes sense. And then the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. So there are a couple of teams that fit his bill in the back end of the first round. And I really like what he brings to the table from a physical standpoint and just in a coverage standpoint.
You can follow Russell Brown on Twitter at @RussNFLDraft.
All right, Russell, the Titans currently hold the 89th pick overall in the third round. If the Titans were to draft a speedy wide receiver at that spot that you could see falling to the third round, who is that receiver for the Titans at 89?
That's Dante Pettis out of Washington. I think he's got everything that you're looking for when you're talking about a receiver. There's so much to like about him as far as the route running ability. And he's got everything that you want as far as he can return. He can line up in the slot, quick, shifty, strong hands, get the ball to catch point, high points it, a good route runner. So everything that you want out of a receiver, he brings. I think there was just, a little bit of a disconnect as far as maybe he's not the best overall player, most complete receiver in the draft compared to Calvin Ridley and DJ Moore. But at 89, if you can get Dante Pettis, I think that's a steal.
One more process question for you. When you're evaluating players and prospects coming into the NFL, do you look at where they played? And what I mean by that is if let's say a Wisconsin offensive lineman coached by Paul Chryst may be valued better than other guys who didn't play in that system. A defensive back that was coached by Nick Saban in Alabama may have a step up on someone else. Is there a specific system, position coach, or group of coaches that you look at and value differently as to where they played in college?
A little bit. I mean, I think really, I look at, okay, is he running stuff? So we're talking about a quarterback, for example. Is he running stuff under center? If he's not, how much stuff is he running out of shotgun? Is he running stuff out of the pistol? And I look at that and I say, okay, well, who's his coach? And then, when I look at as far as like the conference, Big 12, when you got players out of the Big 12, the quarterbacks, I question some of it because of the defense that they play against. But I don't really have a specific coach or anything like that. And I don't have like a specific scheme that I like to scout over others. I just like to see kind of what they do. When you look at offensive linemen, can they do everything that you want out of a blocker from a zone blocking scheme, a power running scheme? And I just recently watched Darius Geist more as far as all 22, and I saw a lot of stuff that, he was following his blockers, going with power, doing zone. So I don't really have anything in specifics on that. I just, more so just watch the tape. And when I'm looking at it, I'm watching some of the plays, noticing some trends. But I don't have any other, specific coaches that I really pay attention to.
Final thing for you, non-quarterback here. Who will be a surprise pick within the top 20?
I know I talked about Colton Miller potentially being the guy at 23. I think that's who they got their eyes on because he fits, he's similar to Nate Solder in that regard. But I really think Colton Miller could be a fit for a team like Arizona at 15. They need offensive tackle help. Mike McGlinchey obviously could be the guy. Connor Williams could be that guy. But Colton Miller with that athletic ability and the way he tested at the combine, I think it's going to push him off a lot of boards. And teams are going to look at that and say, hey, we can draft this guy. I think he'll be the surprising player because out of the offensive tackles, he's still very raw. He lunges a lot. As an offensive tackle, which you don't want to see. He's got a really weird kick step and the angle that he takes on it. But at almost 6'9", 309 pounds, he ran a 4.95 in the 40, 24 reps in the bench. So he's got the explosiveness. He's got big hands. And there's a lot to like about him. He's still very raw, but I think he'll be the surprising pick in the top 20 when it's all said and done.
Russell Brown, analyst for Cover1.net, host of the Cover1 podcast. How often are you recording those podcasts?
We do podcasts on Wednesday nights, and they normally drop Wednesday night, but most people listen to them on Thursdays and then Sundays. And sometimes we'll do something on a Monday or Tuesday, just kind of depends on what we have lined up, but more than likely Wednesdays and Sundays every single time.
Follow him on Twitter at RussNFLDraft for those links. Russell, thank you for the time, man. We've enjoyed this.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on. Best of luck to everybody else, and again, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Russell.
Russell Brown, cover1.net.
Three strong finalists, and Michael Kiss is going to get his bonus 8 minutes at some point. We'll have a winner for you by the end of the week.
We think.
We're gonna deliberate, and we're going to have it for you then. By the way, our podcast page, we had some problems with iTunes.
Oh, yeah, make this announcement.
Yes, a big announcement here, is back up and fully functional through iTunes. We're hearing from a lot of people that's how they listen. They get the updates on iTunes. You now can listen to the show and listen to our interviews through iTunes. So big announcement there. And we're also going to make sure everyone that votes on it, we're going to give you the opportunity. We'll tweet it out. We'll post it again to make sure you can go back and listen to the three finalists, because we value the opinion of our listeners out there. We also want an educated opinion. So we want you to listen to our three finalists and help us make this decision, which is going to be a really difficult decision, because everyone was really good in this competition. The three finalists were really, really good. So it's going to be tough. No easy decisions here.